Hello and welcome to episode 60 of Minol's World. Thank you all for joining me this week. And if you're new here, thank you for joining me on this journey of learning and unlearning from the greatest change makers, thinkers and activists of our generation. I surely have learned a lot and I hope you do too. This week, I'm joined by Jessica Jones, who's also known as the Fat Funny One on Instagram and on social media. I met Jess a couple of years ago when we did something for Migration Museum and we did an Instagram live together, and I think she got that whole conversation and put it on her podcast. In the last couple of years, we've been in touch. I've been following her journey. Her family has been growing. She's got 4 children, which I just think is crazy. I can never imagine getting at that stage in my life. But I've been following her for a while, seeing everything that she's been doing, and I've always wanted to have her on, but she just released a book and I've read it, and I think it's one of the greatest self-help books that you'll ever read, because it's not just practical, but it's also very sensitive about everybody's individual needs, which is something I think is very, very, very important. Now, Jess came on the show on a Friday and we did this quite late at night. We were planning to do it a lot earlier in the week, but with kids it's been really difficult. But she sat down with me on a Friday night at, I think it was like 9:30 p.m. or 8:30 p.m., something crazy like that. And we spent our Friday night together. So it was a lovely conversation. And as I edited this episode, I laughed, but I also felt very emotional at the same time, because she's an incredible woman who's been through so much and just using all of that energy in a very positive way. So without further ado, here's Jessica Jones. Welcome to the show, Jess. It's so nice to finally get to do this. I think we've been trying to do this for a very long time, but it's nice to sit down with you. Well, I'm technically standing up, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. It's so nice to have a chat, because like you said, it's been a little bit of a diary faux pas, like trying to get our diaries to match.
Yeah, last time I saw you, well, we met initially when we did an Instagram live for Migration Museum, I remember, and then we just randomly met at the zoo, right? Or the animal farm. You were just waving at me frantically from like a tractor saying, "Mina, Mina."
I was like going to the kids, "There's my friend, there's my friend," across the farm. But that was so nice, wasn't it?
And you were pregnant at that time, so you hadn't had the fourth one yet, and we were just waiting for it to happen. But how are you feeling now, Jess?
Tired.
Yeah.
it's amazing and exhausted. I thought, oh, I've got 3, 4's not going to be that big of a difference. Like, what's the big deal? How wrong was I? 3 to 4 has been like, what? Like, this, we're really outnumbered.
And what's different to what you'd expected?
I think just the level of everybody needing you at one time. So when you split yourself into 1 and then 2 and then 3, you get used to that. And then suddenly splitting yourself into 4, I just suddenly was like, oh my gosh. Like, and I think also I was lulled into this false sense of security with 3, because JJ was born like 2 days before lockdown in 2020. So we were, you know, didn't have to commute to work. The kids weren't going to school. We were at home all the time. So we had this really easy transition into 3, because we kind of didn't really have to go anywhere or do anything. And so now when I've been hit with 4, I suddenly need to get 4 people in the car to go to school and do all of the normal things, which I guess I didn't do when I had 3. Yeah, it's been very strange, but amazing. So amazing seeing them interact and stuff. But yeah, it's been a bit of a whirlwind.
What are they doing right now, Jess? Sorry, I have to ask, like, how did you manage to sit down and record this with 4 kids?
The baby is 4 months, he's asleep. The 2-year-old is asleep, well, in his cot with a bottle, so I imagine he's probably fallen asleep now. And then the girls are allowed, because it's Friday night, so they are allowed some screen time. So they're playing, one of them's watching Frozen on her tablet, and the other one's playing a computer game. So they're 4 and 9. But I don't mind them staying up a little bit late on a Friday, because it means they sleep in a little bit on Saturday morning.
I love these tips, Jess, because when Radhika grows up, I'm just going to use one of these tips.
It doesn't work for every kid. Some kids go to bed late and still wake up early, but mine don't. If they go to bed late, they will sleep in. So Friday night is their treat night. So every Friday night, though, as a family, we watch a film. So we call it Moozer Night, which is movie and pizza night, and we try and do that every Friday. So we have just watched a film as a family of 6, and then everyone kind of disperses into doing what they want to do.
When did you write this book, Jess? Was it during lockdown, or has it just been a compilation throughout your whole life where you've just been writing it as you've gone along?
No, so I got, I can't even remember. It's all a blur. I think I did it throughout 2020 because my final manuscript was due in April 2021. So when people talk about the book now, I'm like, oh my gosh, I literally handed it in almost a year ago. So it's been such a long time. But I wrote it pretty much all of the back end of 2020 and early 2021. So like peak lockdown pandemic in the house with the kids. And it was a great, I kind of just basically worked all through the night, if I'm honest. So I still had a full-time job then that I was working remotely and then had the kids. But my husband was at that point a stay-at-home dad. So I was really, really fortunate because I had the support at home, but I pretty much just worked all night. I was looking back at some text messages with some of my friends where I was texting them at like 1 a.m. and I was like, I just need to get to this word count and then I could go to sleep. I just need to get in this chapter and then I can go to sleep. So it's a real labor of love. But because I guess the style of the book is very much about my own journey, a lot of it. But I also had to do a lot of research to back up some of the things I was talking about and make sure that it was credible and helpful and gave people, you know, real resources and stats. So I think the part about me is easy, isn't it? You can just write that. That's the easy bit. But the rest of it was tricky. But it was done. I did it, which is like crazy.
Jess, you started your book off by talking about how you met your husband now, Trev, in 2011. Yeah, is that right? And how you had Sophia and then you were in this mess and you looked at your diary entries from back then thinking, you know, at that time it was so difficult for you. Everything was so challenging. You didn't understand the concept of self-love and self-compassion. I personally don't think we ever will as humans. Mm. I don't think, unless, I mean, I won't talk for the monks and stuff. That's a whole different level. But I'm just talking about us.
Yeah.
You know, at our kind of level, I don't think we'll ever reach that stage because it's always something to learn. But if you don't mind me asking, Jess, what was it like at that time? You had just met Trev and you fell pregnant unexpectedly. And you had a baby coming along the way, not knowing what was going to happen. Firstly, Jess, what was it like to tell your family and extended family, saying, look, this is a position I'm in. I need your support.
I kind of did and didn't. I remember, so funny story about my due date. So I was due the 31st of August and my mum, who had never been married before and was finally getting married after like a million years, was due to get married on the 1st of September. So I was due like the day before her wedding and the wedding that she'd waited like 50 years for. I laugh now. At the time, I was more scared about that than actually telling her I was pregnant. I was like, the pregnancy is one thing. I've got to tell her I'm due the day before her wedding. And at that point, she had never met Trevor either. I'd met his parents, but he had not met mine. And I was like, what am I going to do? And I was renting a flat and I was somewhat independent. And I knew my mum would kind of be like, whatever happens, you've got this, you'll be fine. But I think there's a real sense of when you want to ask for help or even just tell family something that is so life-changing, there's a real fear around letting people down or feeling like you're disappointing them. I was 21 at the time. I think I was 22 by the time I had Sophia. And it was maybe 22 and 23. I can't remember. It's all a blur. But it was really hard. And I rang her. I remember ringing her and saying, I've got something to tell you. And she was like, okay. She's like, I'm just in Tesco's. And I was like, oh, do I call her back later? But I obviously sounded really serious. And she was like, what's wrong? I said, oh, I'm pregnant. And she went, okay. I said, I'm due on the 31st of August. And she went, okay, I'm going to call you back. And I thought, she's never calling me back. Like, she's going to disown me now. But she did. And then they came and met Trevor. And I'm fortunate that it all worked out. And I'm really lucky that I've got that support network. But I think also the not the downside, but the other side of that is when you've got such a great support network, you feel so much pressure to not let them down. But they were great about it. And I think my mum knows me probably at that point better than I knew myself. And so it was always like, whatever happens, you're going to land on your feet. Like, I know you, you're so determined and so, you know, stubborn. You're not going to let this, you know, stop you from pursuing whatever else you want to pursue. And at that point, I was like, yeah, right, you're just saying that because you're my mum. But she was right. So I think it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? You don't want to let people down because you love them so much, but equally you need them in those moments.
What was your upbringing like, Jess? Where were you born?
So I was born in London. I lived in London until I was probably in my early teens, with my mum and my younger brother. So my mum was a single mum, grew up in a council estate in North London. Everything about that upbringing was about community. So we were really good friends, like our neighbours. I lived in like this little estate and I knew everyone in every block. We all went to the same school, but all the mums were really supportive of other mums. You know, someone would say, I'm just going to Tesco's, can someone watch the kids? And be like, yeah, right. And it was just, that's the one thing. It was really multicultural. I grew up with people with different religions, races. It just, when I look back, I feel so fortunate that I had such a beautiful upbringing in that sense. And there was things, you know, my mum struggled with money, something that I guess I now reflect back and see as an adult, looking back at my childhood, but at the time probably had no idea. But yeah, we grew up in London and then moved when I was in my early teens. And then I think when I got to teenagers, that's when I probably struggled the most with my identity. Who am I? What am I doing? I'm from a mixed background. So my mum is Black British and my dad is white British. And I'd never met my dad at that point. I only met him when I was 27. And so I only had my mum. Yeah, I only met him a few years ago.
So you had Sophia and you still hadn't met your father?
No. Not until 2017.
So throughout your whole life, you hadn't met your father and it was only at the age of... Really? Mm.
Yeah, so it's just me, my mum, and my brother.
And your brother with the same as well?
We've got different dads, yeah. So we've got different dads. So my brother's younger than me. And my mum was with his dad while I was really young. And then they split up. But yeah, I hadn't met him. And I think it's when I hit teenagers that really became a who am I? What am I doing? I don't really fit in anywhere. I'm not really sure who I am. I'm very white passing. So people didn't really always connect me with my mum. And so I really struggled with my identity about who am I, where do I belong? I don't look like my family, but, you know, it was really, really hard. And I really struggled with my weight, with my life, with not having money, feeling that at that point, you know, not having designer clothes. And to be fair, I say designer to me was like Nike and Jane Norman. Like it wasn't like actual designer. So that's when I probably was hit with the biggest challenges. And those are the things I've probably overcome the most in my adulthood. And that's what I talk about a lot in the book. But being a young child, it was pretty easy breezy from memory. So yeah, it was only, I guess, when I got to my teens that it really started to be a thing.
Did you study after school? Did you go into college or university or did you go straight into a job?
So I went straight into a job. I went to college actually. So I went to college, which always surprises people when I tell them what. So I did A levels. So I did A levels in government and politics, psychology, English literature, and law, which everyone is like, what? And now you just get your bum out on the internet? I'm like, yes, that is basically, I studied to do that. So I did A levels. I always wanted to be, do criminology, which I was obsessed with, like, CSI when I was a teen. So I really wanted to do that. But it didn't work out and that was fine. And I ended up going straight into work. I didn't go to university. I don't think the studying part, the academic part was me, which is strange because I study now as an adult and love to research and love to learn. But at that point, it just wasn't. I went straight into work. I ended up being a holiday rep and I worked abroad for a summer, which was amazing. And then came home and just landed into work. I've worked in recruitment for the best part of 12 years now, probably a bit longer, and have developed that career and still do that. But I now work really niche down and work particularly in diversity and inclusion within the hiring process, and consult for some big companies and brands, which is amazing. But yeah, I went straight into work. So I didn't do the whole university thing. I did try and go back part-time when I was working full-time to do English literature, and I lasted probably a couple of terms and just couldn't hack it. It just wasn't wasn't for me. It wasn't for me. And I admire that journey. I just, yeah, it wasn't for me at that point, I don't think.
I mean, you've said a lot of things which have popped in a lot of questions, but I just wonder, what was it like for you to be growing up with your little brother? And you said your little brother had a different father. Mm-hmm. Was there any, like, how was it growing up? Was there any friction? I mean, did your younger brother get to see his father at any point? And did you feel left out? Like, what was it like? What were the dynamics like?
I was really lucky. So he wasn't my stepdad per se, but he was a father figure when I was really young. And his family were really amazing. So if my brother went over to theirs, then I went with them. And they almost treated me like a granddaughter. And I guess because I was there before my brother was there, I kind of came with my mum as this package, so to speak. So I was there from the beginning and they were always so welcoming. And actually, even now, his grandmother, his dad's mum, will still ask my mum for me. She's a friend. I'm friends with her on Facebook. Like, we're still really close. I'm friends with his dad on Facebook. So there's still a part of that for me. And when I was younger, I knew he wasn't my biological dad, but it never really occurred to me that that was a thing, that it was an issue or a problem. It just never was. And I think my mum also, one thing, and I always say this to people, my mum never, ever, ever said a bad word about my biological dad, ever. I never, and to be fair, I don't think there was anything wrong. They weren't particularly dating, you know, they hooked up, so to speak, and I came here, I was born. So they were never in a relationship, but she never, ever said anything negative. So I think that had a real impact on me because I had nothing negative to think. There was nothing about it. And I've always supported people to have the choice of how they live their life and what they do and if they want to become parents or not. So I always just felt if he didn't feel that he could be a parent at that time, then that was his choice. Just as if my mum didn't want to choose to be a parent at that time, that's a choice she could have made. And so I always felt like that, and felt quite strongly about that. So yeah, I was always included. And I think that made a massive difference. But I also, my mum's family were very close. I'm very close to my grandfather. I always had a father figure. Mm. So I guess because there was no loss in my mind and I was always included, it never really felt like a thing until, I guess, yeah, like I said before, when I got to my teens. And then you suddenly go, why didn't he want to be a dad? Why? And I actually realised all of those decisions had absolutely zero to do with me. And everything to do with him and the position he was in that point in his life and not me. But yeah, it was pretty cool. I look back and think I'm really fortunate that I was always surrounded by love.
It's incredible to see how your mother never sort of let you feel that void, because it's a very difficult job to do. And I look at you now and now, you know, you got Trevor with you, you got your four kids, and surely your childhood has impacted the way you want to be a mother and the way you want your partner right now to be a father to your children. So when you did fall pregnant, and you know, you told Trevor about all of this, and obviously looking back at your history thinking, well, what do I do now? Trevor is the father of my child and I want to get him involved. So what was that like? That must have caused I'm sure a lot of questions and a lot of anxiety.
Yeah, it was so stressful. So Trevor was still at uni then. I was like, by the way, I'm having a baby. He was like, what? But I gave him a choice. I said, you know, you're welcome to come on this journey with me. This is what I'm doing. But you're also welcome not to. And he was like, no, absolutely. I'm here for it. Like, this is it. This is, you know, we've done this together. We're in this together. And so we are. And we told his parents and they were really supportive. Shocked, but supportive. And I think, again, because we were surrounded by everyone kind of saying, cool, well, this is it, let's go for it, we're here, what do you need, we were really lucky. But it was definitely a big question mark. And actually, it's only really now, even though I've been a parent for the best part of nearly 10 years, because Sophia's 10 this year, I only really dig deep into how your childhood impacts how you parent and how that is. And my mum is my best friend now. We are so close. I call her, no exaggeration, multiple times a day. However, and I've said this to her and I would say it to her and I think she'd agree, as much as I love my mum, there are so much parts of her parenting that I take into my parenting style now but there are also parts that I don't and don't want to. And she's very comfortable with that because she's like, I did the best I can with the resources and the position that I was in. She had me at 21. So she's like, you learn from that and you do a better job than I did. And then I hope that, you know, if my children then become parents, they do a better job than I do. But yeah, I realise now that there are so many aspects of my parenting or how I was parented that I don't particularly want to do with my children. I think there's just so much more research now, isn't there? And understanding about the impact that has. So, you know, my family in Caribbean, it was very old school in terms of discipline and, you know, children are seen and not heard and all of that stuff. And actually, we are trying to very much parent our children in a slightly different way, and have open conversations with them and not make them feel like they can't be heard or can't ask questions, which is really hard as a parent because ego makes you want to just be like, no, I said so. Leave it out. Like, I said you can't do that, so you can't do that. And Sophia's a child who say, but why? Why can't I do that? And I'd be like, because I said so. And actually, that's just not a sufficient answer, is it? Because if I said to Trevor, can I move that? And he said no. And I go, why? And he said, because I said so. I'd be like, what? What do you mean? So yeah, it's really interesting. And particularly looking at Trevor being a father, I've got an idea of what that looks like. And obviously I have my grandfather and other people that I can, I guess, assume or take from. But he has to come into that in his own way as well. So we're definitely learning together about how this whole thing works.
Well, you're 10 years in and you're still learning, Jess. Come on.
My mum's like, she's still learning. And I'm like well in my 30s. My brother's nearly 30. And my mum's just like, you never... The thing is, a parenting though, isn't it? You're always going to learn because you're never going to parent a child of that age at that point. Like, you've never done it before, particularly if you're your first child. So I'm my mum's first child. She's never had a 32-year-old. She's never had a 32-year-old. So she's going to learn what that's like. And it doesn't matter how old you are, does it? As a parent, you're always learning because you're never going to have a child of that age. So no matter how old we get or at what point it is, it's always going to be a learning. And even the way I parented Sophia, I've probably adapted how I then parent Isabella or Jason or Theo, because also they're different children. So their requirements are different. And it's all just mind-boggling, isn't it? There's just so much.
I think you can write a book on each child, Jess. Like, that's... Honestly. You know, that's, but I'll be really honest, Jess, even as doctors, and people always ask me, so my husband is a doctor, I'm a doctor. And the other day, Radhika had a bit of a stumble. And she hurt herself. She was okay. Very, very small thing. But I actually started crying because I just didn't know what to do because it's like my baby. And I'm like, oh my God, what have I done? Like, not a single like drop of blood, nothing. She just hurt herself. She just fell. And now because she can communicate, she said, Mummy, it's hurting. Yeah. And that really broke my heart because I saw my child in pain. Like, yeah. She felt something. At that time, I was about to call my mom, like crying, like, oh my God, what's happened? But I didn't do that because I knew that she'd get stressed out and stuff. But for a moment,
that's what I do.
For a moment, I just thought, Jess, imagine, like, we give CPR to patients and it's just like normal. And then Radhika stumbles and I'm like, oh my God, I'm like breaking down.
Because the emotional connection, the science, the like behind that connection between a parent and a child is just so crazy. And however you become a parent, whether you've birthed that child or not, that connection in that relationship bond is so strong that you can't. So even now, like, it was really stressed the other day and I rang my mum crying because I was just like, and she started crying and she was like, aww. And I was like, why are you upset? She's like, I'm upset because you're upset. And so it doesn't stop, does it? And my mum is super, like, she can cope with loads. And it doesn't matter. I don't think it matters what profession you're in, what you do, even if you are the most trained, you know, strict, meticulous, like comfortable in any emergency situation person, when it comes to your children, something just is like, no.
Yeah. I agree. And I hope me saying this makes other people feel comfortable as well, because sometimes people look at us like, oh, two doctors, like, you know everything. And I'm like, actually, we really, really don't.
And I think that's the scary thing, because I've got another friend who's a doctor. I think it's also scary to put that pressure on someone, because there's then an added layer of pressure for you as a doctor and a parent that you feel, oh, well, I should know that. I should react like this. I should behave like this. I should do this because I should know better, because I've been trained to know better. And that pressure is a lot, because actually it's not that easy. No matter, you can know everything. I don't think there's a single parenting expert, even if you've studied children and childhood psychology and everything. There's only so much expertise you can have, because it's not an easy ride, and it's so unpredictable. Everything about it, every emotion you feel, every learning, it's just, there's no way you can ever just do it and it be easy.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful thing that, you know, we're very blessed with. So one of the things that I've learned as well is that even as a doctor, if I don't know so much, then that's one thing. But sometimes I gave my mother a hard time and she knew less than me. So I'm very empathetic towards her now.
I do think there's a level of respect you have for your parents once you become a parent. That is just next level.
I don't tell them, though. Maybe one day I will. But for now, let's just keep it as it is.
Keep it between us, that's right.
Jess, I wanted to go back to the point that you made about meeting your father at the age of 27. So what was that process like, and how did that happen, and why did that happen?
It was so random. It's probably like, I could probably write a book on this as well. It was just like, I feel like I'm going to have a whole like series of books at this point. Or just make my life a Netflix series. I think that just makes it so much easier. So really random. My friend wanted to go and see a psychic medium, and I am like totally not into stuff like that. Respect everyone who is, it's just not my thing. And I went with her. She'd had a family member pass away, and it was part of her grieving, something she wanted to do. So I went with her. And this woman said to me, oh, there's a lady saying something about you. And I was like, she was like a grandmother. And my grandma was like round the corner at her house, like living life. So I was like, it's not my grandmother. Like, I have no idea who you're talking about. And obviously the only grandmother I knew was my mother's mum. And she was like, no, it's definitely an older lady, a grandmother, an auntie. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then she kept giving me all this information. And
was it someone who could like predict your future and someone who could read?
Yeah, she was like, she could speak to people who had crossed over, or speak to the dead. Always just sounds really like morbid and a bit. But yeah, so this is what she could do. So I went with my friend, and it was my friend who she was seeing. And then she said, oh, actually, do you mind if I tell you some stuff? And I was like, all right. Anyway, I went home and I rang my mum. I said, this lady said this, isn't this? And my mum said, well, that's a bit strange. I wonder. And then my mum kind of said, I wonder if she was talking about your dad or your dad's side of the family. And I thought, oh, like, that's a bit random. And then after 20 odd years, I said to my mum, well, what do you know about him? Because I'd never asked before. I just wasn't, not that I wasn't bothered, but I think I had everything I had. And because he wasn't there and then left, there was no place to fill. There was no void, I guess. I think it's very different if you have a parent who then leaves, or you have parents that then separate. I think that's a bit different. Anyway, she told me all this stuff, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I relayed that information to a friend of mine. I was like, oh, you're never going to guess what? My mum told me this. My friend was like, oh, okay. And then I said, I wonder if I should like look for him. Should I look for him on the internet? Like just go on Facebook. Like, I don't know. Like, what do you do? Just put it into Google. I was like, I don't know. Anyway, I left it. And then a couple of weeks later, I was out with my friend for a drink, and I said, oh, I've been thinking, like, maybe I should have a look. And they said to me, what if I told you I kind of already have, and I kind of think I found him? I was like, what? And he had. He'd found him online with the details that I'd given him. It was just really bizarre. And I was like, well, what do I do? Like, do I email him? Like, what do you say? So he had a business, and I thought, I'll email the business account, and I won't make it like really like emotional. Like, I'm just gonna put a really like simple message. So I just put, hi, my name is Jessica Gregory. It was my maiden name at the time. I didn't even put my surname. My email address was my surname. And I just put, hi, I'm looking for a particular, and I put his name in. I said, I hope this reaches you. Let me know if this is the best contact. So I put nothing, like I literally left it super vague. I put nothing, didn't hear anything. And then a couple of days later, I was at my desk at work, and I got an email back saying, hi, Jess, I'm your dad. Yeah, you've got the right person. And obviously they knew who I was because my name was my whole email address. So although I hadn't put any information on there, they would have known my name straight away. So they would have seen my email address and known who it was. And just said, oh, it's really nice to hear from you. I didn't come back to you straight away because I had to tell my children that you'd got in contact. Because they didn't know. His wife knew I existed, but the children didn't. And he was like, respectfully, he wanted to give them time to process that and ask if it was okay if he came back to me, which I was fine with. And so, yeah, we went back and forth, exchanged numbers, and then I met up with him and his wife for like a coffee. They were lovely. They were so nice. And I guess because I had no hard feelings, like there was nothing, I didn't feel negative in any way or like angry. I just didn't. I think if you had an upbringing that was particularly tough because of the absence of someone, that makes a very big difference. But I didn't have that, so I kind of had no reason to be mad. So I met up with them, and then I met my brother and sister, and we all got along really well. They were at my wedding, and yeah, we've just kept in touch ever since. And we got married the following year, so we'd known them for a little while then. And we, for my wedding like tasting dinner, I took my parents, Trevor's parents, or my mum, my stepdad, Trevor's parents, and then my biological dad and his wife, and we all met, and they could all meet up, and everyone got along. All the three mums just like were chatting away, and they're all similar ages, and they just all got on. And so I just had no hard feelings. The only thing, and this is really funny, so at my wedding, I obviously didn't put my dad at the head table or anything like that. I had my mum and my stepdad and Trevor's parents, and they were sat at another table. And my mum gave a speech. And obviously everyone, what was really weird is that everyone at my wedding, I've known longer than my biological dad, because obviously they were all my friends and family. And so my mum said, oh, you know, it's an amazing day. It's really lovely to have Jess's dad here, you know, and all be together. And then she said, but before I go, I just want to let you know that you owe me. And she read out this really long number, and she was like, £17,644.12 in child support. And everyone just burst out laughing, and he just shouted, cash or check? And she was like, we'll talk after. And it was just so funny, but it kind of killed the elephant in the room. But it was just a moment where everyone could come together and have a bit of a laugh. And obviously it wasn't about the money. It was just like a total joke, but it was really nice. So I've been quite fortunate that that's, again, in that scenario, I'm surrounded by love, even though it's a somewhat of a weird and complicated scenario.
As you say it to me, Jess, it does sound very movie-like. I mean, I didn't expect anything you said.
I told
right
you,
now.
Netflix.
Nothing you've said right now I expected you to be like in tears crying, saying, why did you leave me? But I think your mother has done a great job, Jess. Honestly, as you were speaking to me, I was thinking, man, your mother has really raised a great woman to not have that bitterness, to not have that anger as well, because you know, you must have had the question, like, why did you leave and where were you? Like, did you not care about me? Did you not want to know where I was?
Yeah, I think I've not. It's funny because I was a guest on someone's podcast recently, and at the end of it, they said, oh, if you could ask anyone in the world a question and they had to be honest with you, who would you ask? And I censored myself at first. And then I said, actually, do you know what? I'd have a really honest conversation with my dad and I'd ask him what happened. And we haven't had that conversation yet. And to be fair, there's not much he could say that would make me angry or feel any type of way about it. But I think that does come down to the fact that I am pro-choice. And because of that, I think that extends to men as well as women. So for me, he had a choice whether or not he was going to become a parent, just like my mum had a choice whether or not she wanted to become a parent. And he chose one thing. And sometimes I do think, did I kind of cross a boundary by making contact? Because if that was the choice he made, did I kind of go over that a little bit? But also I think if that's the case and he didn't want to then know me, he didn't ever have to reply. There was no, do you know what I mean? If he didn't want to and I crossed a boundary and actually he didn't really want to know me at all, he just would never have replied to me, and that was fine. But I guess I didn't need anything from him. And maybe when I have that conversation, because I think there will be a day when that conversation happens, maybe I'll feel a bit differently. Maybe there will be a level of emotion that I probably haven't got now, because that conversation will be quite deep and I've not touched the surface on it. So it's still all a bit, oh, this is nice to some degree. But again, because I don't think I feel like I need much from him. I'm well into my adult life. I've got my own family. I'm really close to my mum. I've got a stepdad who's been in my life since I was probably about 17 or 18. And then his family have been my family. So I guess there's no anything else or anyone else that comes to my life in that form is a bonus, rather than filling or replacing any void that I had. But yeah, my mum, I think that has made a massive difference, the fact that she worked so tirelessly hard, but also was very honest and positive and never said anything negative. I didn't ever inherit any bad feelings. And even as a parent now, I think, gosh, she must have been filled with so much resentment, particularly when it was hard. Sorry, one sec. I'm just going to switch off my Alexa because it's making those noise. When I look back now, I think as a parent, in those moments where it's really hard and relentless, she must have been filled with so much resentment. Like, how frustrating. You think, oh my gosh, I'm alone with this kid. Like, this is so hard. There's no one to pass them over to. There's no one to ask for support. There's no one to just pick up the baby in the night so you can sleep an extra hour. Like, there's none of that. And I just think, wow, even in all those moments, she never was negative. I never knew any of that as a child. I never knew any. As an adult now, we talk about it, and that's why. But as a kid, I had no idea.
Wow.
And I think that's testament to her.
She's amazing. Wow. I really want to meet her, Jess. I think, you know, the way you've
written... Oh my God, she's like obsessed with everyone. She'd love Radhika as well. Oh my God, she'd love her.
That's incredible, Jess. And I think all our mothers in some form or another have, to some extent, sacrificed something in one form or another, even my own mother. And I know I was joking about it before, but I think every single day I look at my challenges with Radhika as a mother, and I think I just don't know how my mom did it. And just a few weeks ago, I had this realization, Jess, that I'm the first woman in my whole family to be a working mother. So no one in my family has done this before. No one has sort of experienced this kind of life where you've got to work, got to take care of family, you've got to take care of a baby. But my mother has been like such a great support. If it wasn't for her, then I wouldn't have been able to do any of this. And I feel all daughters, at some point in their life, we go through so many peaks and troughs in our relationships, whether it was with our father, with our mother. There are days where we can't stand them. But ultimately, especially as we grow up, what we saw as trauma at some point in our childhood has actually become more of a love for everything that they did, and we don't resent them for it.
Absolutely. And I think it's really hard. But like, I've always seen, so your parenting journey is going to be so different to your mum's. So the challenges that she faced will be so different to yours. The working mum guilt that you have, she probably didn't have. But then she had the relentless parenting constantly without any time for herself, without any thing for herself in that way. So there's so many different things that we go up against. My mum was a working mum, so I get a lot of my work ethic from her. But I also realise how much there are gaps that you miss when you are at work. And so it's really, really hard. But I think there is just a level of appreciation for parents that you have. And even if in those moments in childhood where things weren't probably that great, I think you still have a respect for the fact that they did what they could with what they had at the time that they had, with the knowledge that they had. Like, I always think to myself, oh my gosh, my mum couldn't like shove an iPad in our face and tell us to like watch a film for an hour. Like, oh my God, there was nowhere for us to go. Like, she had to look after us and entertain us all the time. I know we played outside and it was all a bit different then, but like, there was so much like she had to do, whereas now we can probably do a lot electronically, or it's just all a bit different, isn't it? We've got technology as a real helping hand in some ways for parenting. And she didn't have any of that. Like, she couldn't Google a homework answer like I do all the time. And she couldn't do any of that. And I just thought,
I hope your kids won't listen to this, Jess.
Listen, I always, Sophia knows, I'm like always like, I don't know the answer to that. Let me just giggle it. I just think there was so much. So I definitely think there's a level of respect you have when you become a parent for your own parents. And if not, even if it's not respect, depending on what your childhood was like, I think there's still a level of understanding that comes with it. So you can understand, you don't have to accept or forgive or justify depending on what your childhood was like, but you kind of can sometimes go, right, okay, I see how that happened or what happened or how. But yeah, it's definitely been an interesting ride so far.
suggest you were raised with a mother who chose not to get married after quite a while, after a long time, and then you fell pregnant with your firstborn, and then it took you a few years to actually get married to Trev. So what were your thoughts at that time on marriage? Like, did it mean anything to you? And then at what point did you guys decide that matrimony was the way forward for your family?
So I really wanted to get married. Trevor didn't. So marriage was a really big thing for me. Although now on reflection, I've had to really reevaluate why it was important to me. I grew up in church. I grew up with a Christian family. And so our values were very faith-based in terms of you got married, you had children, you did everything in that order. I didn't particularly do it in that order, but the idea of getting married for me solidified our relationship. It was what we should do, it's the right thing to do, and all of that stuff that we say. And my mum didn't do that, but I never really thought about it much in terms of her. It was very much I should do that path, that's the path I should go down. And I think there's so much stigma that makes you feel some shame around not being married or not being in a relationship or being a single parent. You almost think, oh, I'm going to be a statistic and everyone's going to make a judgment call about me. I'm going to be a typical stereotype, you know, young single mom. And so I think part of that really played into, I want to get married. I want to make sure that people don't think that I'm this single, you know, this person. I don't want to fit the stereotype that people have of me. And I think I probably took it lightly. We were quite young, we were like 22. We didn't get married till 27, 28. But that's because it took me all that time to convince Trevor. No, to be fair, we ended up getting married. We got engaged, but we didn't get married. We weren't planning to get married so soon, but my grandmother was really, really ill, and was having quite a significant operation. The following year, and I was like, I don't know what I'd do if my grandparents couldn't see me get married. It was really important for me that they were part of that journey for me and part of that part of my life. And so we ended up getting married sooner than we probably would have planned, so that I knew she would be there. She ended up living 2 years longer after the wedding, but we would never have known that at the time, because to be fair, her surviving the surgery was quite rare, so we didn't actually think she would be here. So that's probably why we ended up doing that. But I think there's an idea of marriage that everyone thinks about the wedding. Because do you know, I said to someone the other day, someone said, oh, I can't afford to get married. I said, you can afford to get married, you can't afford a wedding. They're two very different things. Like, I don't think people understand, like, when they go, I can't afford to get married, most people can, because it's £100. Like, the actual legal part is not that expensive. Obviously, that's all relative in terms of money. It's still money, but it's not that. It's people can't afford a wedding, but a wedding isn't a marriage. And I learned that after how difficult it is, and the balance between really joining as one and being partners. And that's really challenging. And I go to therapy. I've been in therapy for a few years now. And a lot of that is around trying to become the better version of myself so I can be a better wife and a better partner and navigate marriage and motherhood and life. Because, yeah, I think we underestimate what marriage is going to be like. Because we all just go, oh, yeah, like, we're going to get married and live happily ever after and have a really nice wedding and wear a nice dress. But the wedding is a day. Or sometimes it's a few days.
Well, have you been to an Indian wedding?
I was going to say, exactly. My neighbour just invited me to her son's wedding, and that's an Indian wedding. And she said,
oh, you have to go.
Like, I literally was like, I'm there, like 100%. I've been to a few. But it just made me laugh when she said, oh, it's on the 16th and the 17th and the 18th and the 19th. I was like, okay. But it is just a short period of time, whether your wedding is a day or 4 days long. It is just that, those days. The marriage, everyone's at your wedding, isn't it? Or your family, but they're not there every day after that.
Well, that's the thing, Jess. I think people like the idea of marriage. People like the idea of getting married. Then when it actually comes to being a wife and a daughter-in-law, a mother, it all changes. And I started realizing this last year when I was when Radhika was very young. There were a lot of things coming my way that I just couldn't deal with, and I don't know if it was just the postpartum period, because, you know, Nishant and I, we got married the pandemic happened, I fell pregnant. So we never even enjoyed each other as much as we would have hoped as a newlywed couple. So now that I look back at that time when Radhika was born, I had to deal with lots of different things. And I wasn't great at being all those different people. And now I look back and I think, well, now I actually have a moment to actually choose how I react, choose the kind of mother I want to be and the kind of wife I want to be. But that's only because I have the support around me and I have that help to have that space to think. And a lot of people don't have that. And this is why I get really frustrated sometimes when you see people giving out advice on Instagram or the internet. And I'm like, this is, you know, everyone has a very personal journey and a very personal story. And this is what I really love about your book, because you don't just go out and give advice. You talk about, well, I went through this and this is what I did. This is what you can do as well. And I think that's really important because culturally, there are lots of differences, Jess. I mean, you talk about having Sophia and you weren't even married. If that happened to me, I mean, everyone would have like disowned me for sure.
Don't. My family were, my grandparents were like, when I told my granddad, we had to sit him down and he literally turned to Trevor and was like, so when are you getting married? Like, that's when what's happening now. They kind of got used to it after that and it was fine. And then obviously we're very happy that we got married. But yeah, culture from a Christian Caribbean family is very similar in that respect, from a cultural perspective. Like, no, you should be married. That we did it wrong in some view. But yeah, I think it's the after. We don't think about the long term and the real idea of what being a partner is like. Because to be a partner to someone, there is a level of submission. You have to compromise, you have to submit sometimes, you have to consider other people's thoughts and feelings, basically all the things that I just don't do naturally in some scenario. But you have to, and it's not easy. And I think one of the things I wanted to make sure my book had, and what I portray online, is yes, we put up the lovely family photos, but I always try and balance that out with some real realness. And I remember once saying, oh, you know, me and Trevor had an argument and he's blocked me on Facebook and he's blocked me on Instagram. We literally were like not talking to each other for a couple of days and he blocked me. And I said that and people were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you said that. I said, but that's, I don't want people to think we have this really easy, happy marriage all the time because we post a few pictures. I'm trying to be really honest without, and there's a balance, isn't there? Having your privacy, but being honest enough that people see that it's not all nice. But obviously a level of privacy for yourself and your family. Again, that balance isn't always easy, but I think it's really important. I wanted in the book for it to be a real, not just to listen to my story and this is how I've made it, la, la, la. That's just, it's not helpful to anyone, but real practical, no, this is what you can do. This is what I actually did. And so at the end of each chapter, there's a guided task because I wanted people to have a real takeaway and have real practical tools and things that they could do that would genuinely have an impact on their life rather than just learning my story. Learning my story is great in terms of maybe having some inspiration or seeing someone else do it or understanding what it could look like for you, but that doesn't help you. You actually need to know what happened and how you can do that for yourself. So I really wanted to make it more of a how-to, not just a this is me, but obviously share my story so that people could understand what that meant for me and why and how, but really have takeaways that would make an impact.
Jess, you mentioned in your book you went through a lot to get to this stage now. You went through lots of ups and downs. You went through a lot of hardships to get here. And I was never someone who spoke about any challenges I faced. I just put my head down and just sort of carried on because that's how I was raised. And it's only now in the last couple of years after having Radhika and being a mum, I've realised that actually I don't want to be that role model. I actually want to be open. I want Radhika to understand when, you know, I'm having a difficult day or when things are tough. There's a part of me that looks into the future and says, okay, there's going to be one day where maybe I don't have it all figured out, but I have most of it figured out to sort of be content with my life. Do you think you've reached that stage, Jess, or do you think you still have a long way to go?
A bit of both. Some days I think I have a long way to go and some days I think, what am I actually doing? Like, and then other times I think, no, I'm good. I'm okay. I feel content with where we're at. I've never, even younger, never really strived to be like rich or anything like that. I always just strive to be content and comfortable for me, whatever that looks like. Everyone's different, aren't they, of what that might look like for them. But at the moment, I'd say to some degree, yeah, we are quite happy. We've got in a great place in our marriage. We, you know, the kids are really settled. We're renovating our home. We just bought a period property and moved into somewhat of our forever home. Unless I like win the lottery or something, but for now it's like totally our forever home. I say I win the lottery. I don't actually play the lottery. So
I know a lot of people say that. I can't even remember.
I don't even know how to play it anymore. So like, I don't even know how I said that. But yeah, I think so. I think one of the things I've learned is there's a level of having goals and wanting to do more. There's a level of like having goals and wanting to do more and wanting more for yourself without feeling less than now and without feeling this sense of lack. And so you've got to get that balance right. So I think you have to really work at, you know, I do want more. There's some more career goals that I have. There's more goals around the family and things I want to learn and do and places to go. So there's always more, but I have to be comfortable with where I'm at, that I don't feel like those things take away from what I've currently got. Because I think that's when you can really start feeling bad about yourself and get in a position where, I wish I had that. I'm never going to have that. What's the point in trying for that? Oh, that's, you know, I'm just focusing on what you haven't got can really take away sometimes the joy in just the day and just being. And I don't want that. So I don't know. That was a really long-winded way of answering the question, wasn't it?
No, that's great, Jess. And I think, you know, just to add to what you said about wanting to have certain things and then dwelling on not having them, I think there are things that need to happen at the right time in your life. And that's one thing I've learned, especially over the pandemic when, you know, when I protested and I went outside Downing Street, that whole thing escalated so quickly over a few months that there were so many things coming my way that, oh, I could do this, I could do that, I could do this. But one of the things that people don't tell us, I feel, is that some things need to happen at the right time in your life. But one of the things that Nishan said to me, and my mom had said to me as well, she said, look, these things will always be there. You know, these are the opportunities that you can go for. But maybe now is not the right time. And it was a very difficult pill to swallow, because at that time when everybody sees you as this kind of person, everybody sees you on social media, you want to be that person, not just for yourself, but for everybody else as well, because it looks great on paper. But it was a very difficult pill to swallow, but I think the most important pill for me to swallow, Jess, because after doing that and going through that process of trying to figure out what I really want for me and for Radhika, I really feel a lot lighter and a lot happier as well.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard because you have the pressure of yourself and performing for yourself, but then you suddenly have this almost pressure to perform and achieve for everyone else to see. And I've had to get really comfortable with missing out. I'm someone who like hates being left out. So if like I see an event and everyone's at an event, I'm like, oh my gosh, I really wish I could be there, even though I probably declined the invitation like an idiot. So like, I don't know why like I do that, but I really struggled. And actually even with the book deal, so I was in conversations with another publisher probably 2 years before this one. But they kind of were like, oh, we want you to write about this. And I was like, it's not really, it was all still about confidence stuff, but it was really focused on just mums. And I was like, but that to me, I don't want to niche down on just mums. Confidence for me is accessible to everyone and should be accessible to everyone. And yes, I think mothers go through a slightly different journey of having, you know, the physical changes in their bodies that you know, make a difference. But oh, I don't really want to. And I was kind of like, but like you, my mum was like, there's a time and a place. You don't have to say yes to this. But there's this real fear. But if I don't say yes to this, it's not going to come again. If I don't say yes to this, what if I don't get that chance again? Like, how can I say no to something that I really want? Like, that just seems insane. But I did. It just didn't work out. And I know it's so frustrating hearing that from someone else. You know, when people, like, if people are listening, they're like, yeah, everyone says that. Like, and then it happens, you know, when people say, oh, you know, I missed the bus and it was so, you know, I was so gutted because I really need that bus. But the next bus came along and Prince Charming was on there and £10 million. And you're like, yeah, whatever. But genuinely, things do happen in that way. And I know that's really frustrating to hear when you're in a place of lack, or you've just said no to something, or you're not getting the opportunity, or you don't, like, it's the most infuriating thing to hear. Because I remember when my mum was like, well, is this the right book deal? And Trevor was like, well, something else would come along. I almost felt rage. Like, I was like, don't tell me that. Like, no, that's not what I want to hear. I want you to tell me to go for it, and that I can do it all, and I can have it all, and I'm going to have it all, and it's going to be the best thing ever. That's what I want to hear right now. But what you want to hear, and what you need to hear, and what you want to do, and what you need to do are so different. And so I had to do what I needed to do in that moment. And there's a lot of those decisions sometimes. Like the other day, there was a... an event I really wanted to go to that I was invited to, and I was like, oh, I really want to go. And I just couldn't make it happen. I could have made it happen, but it would have been so stressful, like juggling the kids and rushing around. And I was at one point was like, I'm gonna just do it, because there was part of me, and there was a version of me a few years ago, who would have just struggled and stressed but got there just for the sake of being there. And I just thought, is it really beneficial for me? And even if it is, there's going to be other events. Is this stress worth it? And I just decided it wasn't. And then I was like, oh, I'm not going to watch anyone's Instagram stories because I'm just going to sit at home and feel sorry for myself. But I did. And I actually loved it watching it. And it was lovely. And it was for the first time in a long time, I didn't feel that kind of gut-wrenching, missing out feeling that we can often have when we see other people doing and things that we want to do. One thing I have started thinking about for myself personally and journaling about is my own personal level of entitlement. So sometimes I see other people get opportunities and I think, oh, I could do that. I wish I did that. And I think, oh my God, why am I being so entitled? I'm not entitled to every opportunity that comes up. I'm not entitled to every good thing. I'm not entitled to every, you know, work opportunity or speaking gig or, you know, job offer or whatever it is. I'm not entitled to all of those things. And I had to kind of bring myself down a peg or two, because it also was making me feel really, well, why didn't I get that? That's not fair. I should have got that. Like, you know, and I just thought, oh no. And so I think there's, in all of these things, the most consistent thing that I think is the most beneficial is being self-aware, knowing yourself well enough to know when you're feeling negatively, how and why you're feeling negatively, knowing yourself enough to know when you're feeling or projecting onto other people, when you're knowing yourself well enough to know when an opportunity should be taken and shouldn't be taken. But all of those things come with, I guess, some version of self-love and knowing yourself and giving yourself the opportunity to know yourself well enough and do the work to know yourself well enough that you can make those decisions and be comfortable in them.
Just like you, I'm also impatient. I always want the next thing. And even right now, I'm in a position where I'm trying to figure out if I want to carry on down the route of being a doctor or, you know, doing something else. And my mind is in two places, that if I do be a doctor, then I can't do everything else that I'm doing now that I love so much. But I do also feel that things fall into place somehow. I just really do believe that. Things I love so much about your book, Jess, is that what I said earlier, that it isn't just, oh, this is my story, this is what happened to me, but it's also a solution. I think that's what a lot of us are missing, is that we have these problems every day. And, you know, you mentioned in your book the number of decisions we make a day. Like, I was like, that's so true.
Tens of thousands a day.
Yeah. And then on top of that, we're being, you know, we have all this negative self-talk and we're so negative about what's happening around us. And it's really, really hard. So after reading your book, Jess, and even after just talking to you today, I genuinely feel like there's some part of me that wants to change. So thank you. Thank you so much.
That's amazing.
Giving me that space to think about that. So just before we go, Jess, because you've got four kids, I've got one, so I'm not going to say that I need to go because I'm not allowed to say that with you.
I think one is harder. And I was having this conversation with someone. I've said this a few times recently. The reason why I say that is because you've never had one before. So your first one, you have no clue what you're doing. Like, there's no way of, like, you just don't know what you're doing. I don't care how many books you read or, you know, what your job is. You don't know what you're doing. You could be the bloody world's best pediatrician and become a parent for the first time.
Well, I told you. Rebecca fell and I still didn't know. Yeah, I was like, how do I put bandage on? How do I open this?
it's you just don't know. And I think one is the hardest because the biggest thing for parenting is your confidence. And when I talk about confidence, because I know the book is about confidence, and I think people just thought it's about body confidence and wearing a bikini on the beach, but actually I think it has an impact in every aspect of your life, and particularly with parenting. As I've had more and more children, my confidence in my parenting has grown. So to some degree, it's slightly easier. The only thing that's more difficult is practical things like getting everyone in the car, and getting everyone to where they need to go, and serving everyone at the same time. But the emotional and mental labour of being a parent, I think, becomes slightly easier to some degree because the confidence in my ability has grown. So I definitely think the first one and having one is the hardest. Because one, also you're the only person who can entertain that person. I can let my kids go off and play with each other and have a cup of tea. Well, not the baby, but you know, the others. But yeah, I think one is the hardest. It's that your first step into what is going on. Like even now, I could probably survive on very little sleep and just crack on with it. When I had Sophia, I was like, what is this eye-burning sleep deprivation? Like, what is this? This is hell on earth. Like, what is this sleep deprivation? I was not prepared for it mentally, physically, emotionally, not at all. Whereas now I'm like, oh, the baby sleeps really well. The baby probably sleeps like an hour. But in my mind, I'm like, the baby's like sleeps so well. Because you're used to it, because you've got a level of understanding. So yeah, I think one is the hardest. It's definitely, I genuinely think that.
That's really reassuring. I'm going to play what you said to my whole family, because everyone is like, oh, we had all this. I'm going to actually get this clip and I'm going to send it to everybody.
Because we forget. I think we forget what it's like when you have one. Because I went to a baby group the other day, and there was a mum there, and I had the baby with me, and she was like all flustered, and she was like, I'm so late, I'm so sorry, we couldn't get out of the house, and was all stressed, and I was like, oh, is this your, and she was like, this is the, like, her only, basically it was her only baby. And part of me, my first reaction was, oh, whatever, like, you've got one, you can get out of the house, I had to get four out of the house. But then I stopped, because I thought, oh my gosh, Jess, one, you're being such a cow, and two, one is hard. Like, that was me when I had Sophia. Because I would stress about, have I got everything? What, now I leave the house and I think, oh, if I haven't got any wipes, I'll sort it out. Like, it's no big deal. Whereas at that point, I was like, I need everything. Have I got this? Have I got that? The stress of even just putting the baby in the car and driving anywhere on your own was, like, so stressful. So I just realised, actually, she has got a much harder job. And so it's just hard all around. But, yeah, you're fine. They forget what it was like to just have the one.
Thank you for joining me, Jess. I loved talking to you. I wish we could just do this more often, and I wish I had more time. But I really appreciate everything that you've done, and I just can't wait to see what else you've got, you know, in store for the future. I know many great things are coming your way.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. And keep doing what you're doing. You're doing an incredible job. You have two of the toughest jobs in the world, a doctor and a mum. Like... And you're doing both of them. Like, it's tough. And I think, give yourself some credit. You're doing amazing.
Thank you, Jess. That's very, very kind of you. And again, I'm also going to get the soundbite and play it to everybody.
When you're feeling down, just like play it in like loud. I've got two of the toughest jobs in the world.
your soundbite could be my alarm clock every morning. That's what it could be.
I could do it. Shall I do it in one of those voices? I'd be like... Me now, you've got two of the toughest jobs in the world. Wake up, gorgeous. You've got this. Mum, doctor, you're amazing. Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'll record you one and send it to you so you can wake up to it.
That's lovely, Jess. Thank you so much for being on the show, Jess. And good luck with everything.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for joining me again this week. I'd love to hear your comments and your feedback. And if there's any guests that you'd like me to interview, please let me know. And I'll really try my best to get them on the show. Remember, you can find this podcast on any podcast app. And if you're listening on iTunes, please do leave a review. It really does help. You can also find my library of over 50 episodes on my website, meenalviz.com. And if you do share this with your friends and family, I'm sure lots of people can benefit from these conversations. And just before I go, I also have a newsletter that you can subscribe to on my website. And every week, I'll be in your inbox sharing stories of hope, inspiration, and things that I'm learning on this journey as well. So I hope you all have a lovely week ahead, and I'll see you next Friday with another guest.